Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host Terry, and this is Hell No, the Radio Show. Hell No, the Radio Show is a socially conscious water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature guests and callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. We give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program is not democratic, it's not fascist, it's not politically correct, or a place for sacred cows. What we do is we advocate peace, critical thought, education, reading, and social awareness. Go ahead and write down this telephone number and give me and Terry a call to share your thoughts anytime. Telephone number is area code 718-508-9419. Then when you're prompted, dial option number 1 to be brought live, and we can bring you into the switchboard. Again, that number is 718-508-9419. Hell No is a one-hour show, and we take your calls in the order we receive them. Hell No, the radio show is brought to you all, of course, by our tried and true and trusted sponsors, and Terry is going to tell us about them now.
Our sponsor for tonight's show is Ms. Jane Flint, massage therapist and body worker extraordinaire. She's located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She is just a shade off of the freeway. Trust me, if you've never had a professional massage before, or even if you had, she is the best of the best. I have been worked on by the best of the best, and the only person that was equivalent to Ms. Flint was a Russian lady. She was a Polish lady who was educated in Russia and had the equivalent of a PhD in massage therapy. And that was up in Toronto, Ontario, actually. And she was as good as they got, and Ms. Flint was right up there with her. Ms. Flint has been trained and educated in over 15 different disciplines of massage and bodywork, including the activated stretching routines that they're using on the Olympians now. She's one of only two people in the state of Wisconsin who is certified in that, in those techniques, I should say. You can find her at 10335 West Oklahoma Avenue in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's 10335 West Oklahoma, Suite 205. The number there is 414-321-9030. That's 414-321-9030. Write it down, folks. Get a massage for yourself. Buy it as an incredibly great gift for someone else, an Easter present. Maybe you've got a graduate coming off a hard 4 years of college, or 5 years, or 7 years, or in Nick's case, 14 years. We really would like you to have the benefit of an amazing professional massage. Again, Ms. Jane Flint, 414-321-9030. Thanks. Nick, wake up.
All right.
It's your turn.
I'm here. I just got off a grueling board meeting phone call that I called in. I wonder sometimes, Terry, how anything ever gets done. Then I realized nothing ever really does get done. And
that's very true. You and I both ranted and raved about that, how things in today's day and age are getting to the point where it's like, why are we bothering? Nothing's happening. Nothing changes.
Well,
nobody knows what they're doing, and nobody gets anything done.
In this case,
doesn't get much better than that.
Towards the end of the phone call, this logo gets brought up, and this is I've been with this organization for 4 years now, and once every year and a half or so, we talk about the logo. Someone puts something together, everyone looks at it, we're close to everything's done, and then it falls off the table. Everyone forgets about it, and then we go recreate the wheel again. And towards the end, I realize that a lot of these folks are interested in earning. This foundation is supposed to earn money to support a drug court where people get sober and get their kids back, and the court has fixed operational expenses. And a lot of people just want to ask for money and beg for money, ask for it from the state, from the county. We used to do fundraisers, and it was all private funding and donations. And now You know, it's the group that we have in there. They just want money from state and county people, and they get into this discussion about sanctuary cities and why the Travis County sheriff somehow has his hands tied because the governor's saying, you know, whatever about this sanctuary cities bill. I'm sitting here going, all right, what does this have to do with, you know, it's not impacting our ability to raise funds, but, you know, and it gets into a conversation. Well, what do you do if your client, you know, in family or criminal law is an illegal alien and all this? And, you know, it's like we've gone spun so far away from why we're even here. And we keep trying to get these new people on the board and impress them with all this great stuff we're going to do. We're going to do. And this is nothing ever happens. And then people on the board sort of lose interest and say, this is a waste of my time. Then they get new people on. They talk about doing the logo again. I mean, it's just getting the point where I'm like, this is just stupid. I should have gone fishing instead of been on this call. But hey, you know, it is what it is. Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Well, why don't we get started with our passing personages? Mr. Jay Giles from the Jay Giles Band.
Wow, yeah, that was a surprise to me. I mean, he's not that old, man.
Age 71.
Just barely over 70. And he passed away.
Nope.
Actually, it wasn't a bad sort to work with. On the other hand, Peter Wolf, and I don't mind saying this in public, was an ass. He was an egotistical, bad-tempered ass. And I'm sure he still is. And I would have thought if either of them, you know, were going to go away, Peter would be the one to do so. I had the sad distinction of being someone who got kicked in the head by Peter when I was actually trying to help him out to keep a fan from tackling him, and I was being exceedingly gentle, just trying to keep that fan off onto the side, and Peter thought he would look cool in front of the crowd if he kicked me in the head. So we were mourning the passing of Mr. Jay Giles, and how do we say this diplomatically? There is no way. Mr. Peter Wolf, up yours.
There you go. You know, when you talk about saying, you know, you think that the person who's the grumpy Gus, so to speak, is the one who gets sick more often. And I've noticed that some of the people who have the most problems with health and problems in life are usually some of the angriest people. And whether whether someone, I hear it two different ways. People say they don't have enough Jesus in their life. I also hear, when we talk about the laws of attraction and quantum entanglement and energy and all that, and the people who spew out bad negative energy seem to boomerang it back to them, and they're sick or they have this problem or that problem. They just have just train wreck of issues.
I don't know about that. Plenty of rotten people who just do fine, and some of the great people just drop over, and that's that. And
yeah.
I wish that were true, but it doesn't seem to be from my perspective. I've seen way too much.
Fun. Well, anyways, Jay Giles and Freeze Frame, that song has been in my head a little today, and we'll see if the radio stations play a lot of it.
Centerfold was another one. And
yep.
having been someone who dated a centerfold, that was a song that was, you know, it had some meaning to me, I guess.
There you go.
Anyhow. All right.
Good time.
Onward and upward. Off to other
So, Terry,
other
you
things.
Fly United often?
Very
Do you
rarely.
You fly
I
the friendly skies?
The friendly skies. We'll kick your ass any old way. I'd love to say that surprised me, but it didn't. The only thing that surprised me is that it wasn't American Airlines, because they're even worse than United. But good Lord, you know, the guy didn't want to volunteer. So you hornswaggle him and wrangle him off of the plane, fighting and screaming. How bad is that? I mean, who in their right mind is going to do that in front of a plane full of people with phone cameras?
Well, some of the reactions that I saw out of it. First off, the very significant loss in revenue for United Airlines. bit of a stock sell-off. Warren Buffett, who was a key stock owner, lost some $69 million. 1% sell-off. Yeah, 1% sell-off is a, you know, kind of a big deal. I think they've lost about $1 billion, or someone said a billion, someone quotes in the millions, but they've lost a lot of money because people react to that. And people react to the woman, you know, if you've seen the videos of this, people are reacting to the passengers on the plane who are, you know, beside themselves. You know, they react to all this. And I can't believe that people start politicizing it. That makes me really mad. You know, anytime that there's a officer doing something wrong, people want to, you know, jump on all cops are bad. I made a comment that says, I don't think that this needs to be politicized. I think it was a poor exercise of force and authority. I think it was a little beyond what was reasonable. And so, you know, back the blue 100% all the time. Yeah, well, it's a case by case basis, really. And in this, you know, so I had a few people say, well, don't lump us law enforcement guys in with the TSA. Well, I don't know if these were TSA, whether these were contracted private security, you know,
I don't know who they were,
moonlighting and doing a lot of cops work on the side and have contract security gigs where they make more money.
Yeah, they do.
But in this case, I'll say this. Anyone who's trained in, you know, removing someone or handling an ornery person or a person who's fighting you, especially when we're secure down on the airplanes, I think that we need to have people who are a little bit better trained and are able to, you know, they could have cuffed the guy and walked him through the aisle. You know, they didn't dragging him. It's like, you know, caveman behavior, you know, dragging people. That's just not something that I expect to see in the year 2017. You know, they could have subdued him, you know, this guy. Otherwise, they could have carried him out. But the dragging by the feet, I think, is what's going to, you know, in that video is what's going to, you know, sound for a while. I expect that the guy will probably sue United, and he will probably win a whole bunch of money. You know, the guy's a doctor. I mean, you'd think normally is, you know, but then they say, oh, well, he's not a good doctor. He had some sort of license problem and some disciplinary thing is in his past and his record. And it's a, you know, I mean, I guess they also went through on one of the news programs talking about who is the at most risk of being reaccommodated, as they say. And they talked about the people who are the last to check in on the flight, the people who are not the regular flying customers, I guess the people who didn't pay the, you know, the extra $15 to board early and get the preferred. Those preferred people, they get their seats, you know. You want your chance to actually fly on your seat you paid for, you might want to get that upgraded package and be a VIP because,
well, you shouldn't have, you know, to, though. That should not have direct bearing on it. You know,
absolutely not, but hey,
sorry.
It's right.
I don't agree with that. I fly a lot, and yeah, in these times we are mistreated frequently by the airlines. You can bet that all the airlines are going to react to this. I mean, I was kind of glad to see it happen from the standpoint of maybe it'll finally rein them in and stop them from all this asinine behavior. This stuff is just awful. I have been on planes where people have gotten bumped off, and there is no excuse for that happening. It's not our fault that they overbook. That is not our fault.
Well,
the other part is, in this case, they did not offer him max. The maximum was 1,200. They offered him 800. And they were authorized right there to offer him 1,200. So they never even went to the maximum amount. They don't know if he would have taken that or not. And that's an important point. The other thing is, if the guy was going to be a problem, why don't you ask somebody else? I'm sure there might have been other people on the flight who would have taken $1,200 and gone away happily and gotten another flight and gotten a hotel room and a meal off of them. They just decided that's who they were going to go after. That was a mistake.
Well, and also, I don't know. They are overbooked. They do the overbookings. But I think in this case that people they needed to make room for were United Airlines staff or employees. So maybe flight attendants who are trying to get back to another location where they were needed for staffing or staff another flight or something like that. It's interesting. But again, though, on Facebook, it's been rather humorous. There's been all sorts of memes. You know, all the other airlines are sort of or people who work for the other airlines. I know some Southwest pilots and flight attendants who were sharing some things about Southwest. Well, you know, we beat our competitors' prices, not our competitors, or not you. You know, there's been all sorts of. There were clips from the movie Airplane where the lady's freaking out and everybody's walking down the aisle to like take their turn slapping her upside the head. Lots of funny stuff coming. I mean, you got to make some humor out of a bad situation. There's a term for that, by inappropriate laughter, when you just, the situation's just too perplexing. You don't know, you don't have another proper reaction, and so laughter ensues. But you know, the guy who got dragged down the aisle, not laughing, but maybe laughing all the way to the bank after he settles a huge court case. We'll see.
Flies free forever.
We'll see. Right. Meanwhile, in other court-related news, Terry, you were going to tell us a little bit about a court decision regarding the Lacey Act, which we talked about extensively before, with Lacey Act compliance and trees and everything else in that area. What happened? What's going on?
To bring our listeners up to speed, the Lacey Act is a federal act that originally had to do with the agricultural community in the United States. It has been expanded, and I put that word in quotes, to encompass just about everything they want it to encompass by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And they've been playing bad games with this forever and getting away with it. They've been essentially making up the law as they go along, interpreting it any which way they want to, and then creating criminals by doing so. Well, they finally got slapped by U.S. Court of Appeals, and U.S. ARC, which is the Association of Amphibian and Reptile Keepers in America, were responding to the, first of all, the Fish and Wildlife Service coming out and under pressure and in cooperation with animal rights groups, these radical animal rights groups, and saying that large snakes, large constricting snakes, posed a huge hazard to humans, a huge hazard to the environment, so they were listing them as injurious species, even though they'd been around and been pets with people for God knows decades and decades. And next thing you know, they're all illegal, nobody can move them over state lines, nobody can have them here and there, all sorts of craziness that went on. And in their usual fashion, U.S. Fish and Wildlife thumbed their noses at everybody and basically said, up yours, this is how it's going to be, and this is how we say it is. And the folks from U.S. ARC, and I give them every bit of credit for this, by the way, and Phil Goss, who is the leader of that group, I give him great credit. He kept it under wraps, and they just did it. They had a good legal team. They went up there, and the Court of Appeals, 3-0, said, we agree with U.S. ARC. Well, that's some pretty strong wording for a Court of Appeals. And it was a relatively short, not an opinion, but what's the correct term we're looking for here? And they struck down this stuff, saying that you couldn't transport these animals over state lines within the continental United States, and that the law was never meant to do that, and it was never meant to be that way. I think they are going to go after the whole idea that these are injurious species next, and I sure as hell hope they prevail, because this is just garbage. In Texas, we have ranches that are bringing in kangaroos, and they do so people can go and hunt the kangaroos. Kangaroos can be very invasive. Kangaroos are remarkable in that they can multiply like crazy, and don't talk to me about kangaroo math. that they really are amazingly quick at populating areas. And if anything's a dangerously injurious or invasive species, it's a kangaroo. They don't belong here. The vegetation hasn't adapted to them. The other animals haven't adapted to them. And yet they're bringing them in for purposes of hunting them. You know, a few kangaroos get loose, and the next thing you know, we're going to have Kangaroo Alley. And it's not to say you can't get rid of them. It's not to say that they're impossible to deal with, but it's going to be difficult. And with the big constrictors, it's just a joke. I mean, that the animals are restricted to two small places in the United States where they might survive, and that's it. Possibly a third if you consider the absolute tip of Texas for some of them. So anyhow, I congratulate Phil Goss on this. I congratulate his legal team, and it's about damn time that U.S. Fish and Wildlife started acting in a manner consistent with what they're supposed to be, a conservation organization, not the Third Reich. And that's how they've been acting. And I've got money right now sitting over in Europe for some animals that were perfectly legal that they just decided they would write this two-page reason why I couldn't import these animals. Once again, we're dealing with animals that need to be bred in other places. We need to establish satellite populations, and they're refusing permits for it. And they find all these cockamamie excuses for it. Russ Johnson of the Phoenix Herpetological Society was trying to bring in some captive-born, captive-produced black caimans. He was turned down, then he appealed it, and he was turned down on the appeal. Finally, he called up the head of Fish and Wildlife and basically reamed him out. And guess what? There wasn't any voting that went on. Next day, good old permit guy was told, issue the damn permits and get it over with. And he got the black caimans. So anyhow, congratulations to those folks. I'm glad they did what they did, and I hope they continue doing it. A lot of us in the herpetological community, those of us who are animal professionals, have supported USARC, myself included, and we want to see more from them. So, onward and upward. What's next on our agenda?
Oh, my goodness. There's so much exciting things going on right now.
That would be so many exciting
Before we talk about Easter and Passover, I just want to talk about the dangers of exploding e-cigarettes, the device to safely get your nicotine and smoke, I suppose. But they're blowing up. And I don't know if they were blowing up a lot before, but they seem to be blowing up a lot more frequently now. And they're blowing up in people's, some guy on a bus has one in his pocket, it explodes. Someone has one in the car, it explodes. Just today, someone in Fort Worth had one explode, and the lady jumped out of her truck and the truck hit a tree. And the videos I've seen from surveillance of these explosions, they're significant, and the injuries to some of these people are life-threatening. They're not pretty serious explosions there. Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. Yikes. I don't know what to say other than yikes. I mean, talk about things not working. You know, I think blowing up on you is not what I would call working well. Not only the e-cigarettes, there's one of the Samsung Note Galaxy Note, one of the phones or tablets, that blows up. Those little hoverboard scooter things that the kids ride, those aren't allowed on planes, that blows up. You know, I think that's, would
Let's
you rather
just
have
blow them
the,
up
the
good,
that,
yeah.
That works? Do you want one that doesn't?
Good.
They're like, do you want one that doesn't? I'd like to buy a candle, please. Would you like one that doesn't light or one that blows up?
I want the exploding kind, please, sir. I want it to explode on me. I like them noises and stuff, so I would like it to explode on me.
Okay, you know. So anyone out there, just go smoke cigarettes, damn it. If you got them, smoke them.
No, don't go smoke cigarettes, please. For my sake and the sake of everybody else alive.
Do the e-cigarette.
don't fucking smoke cigarettes. I'd rather have an exploding e-cigarette than the damn real deal. I'm telling you, those things are an amazing bit of toxicity that we have somehow allowed to become pervasive in our society.
You know, it's
scary.
I can't. What I just can't believe is that look at all the anti-smoking campaigns that we used to have. There was MTV and their Truth thing. I mean, they had, you couldn't go to a lot of festivals and things without having the anti-smoking people there with all their things and their pictures of bad lungs and this and everything else. And that seems to have gone by the wayside. I have not seen a lot of maybe it's because I live in the South, who knows, but so apparently it's, suggests that e-cigarettes are a good alternative. I mean, it's just stupid, and it scares me that kids who never smoked anything before start smoking these things because everyone thinks that they're cool. I don't think they're cool. I went to a place to get my inspection done to get my registration renewed, and I'm at the body or the shop, and everyone there, all the mechanics are in there puffing away on these things. Like it's life support or something.
That may be.
Yeah. I don't know. Very, very interesting thing. Another thing about using critical thought, smoking cigarettes is bad, so smoking these things are good? No. But anyways, critical thought is something that we talk about a lot on this program, and, reading between the lines, actually determining what is a fact, what is real, what is not. And well, Facebook now is trying to teach people proper use of social media and reminding them
I'll tell you.
Right, false news stories.
Friends,
like,
at Facebook.
How do you spot a false news story? And it really does beg the question. All these people are saying, well, this is fake news. I mean, anything people don't like now, you can just say, oh, well, that's fake news. I don't know how
Uncle Donald has sort of coined that one.
Well, I mean, he's also said the world is a mess. Now, okay, here's right here. Trump says, quote, the world is a mess. And this is coming from DennisMichaelLynch.com. What in the world is that? It is a perfect example. Trump, the world is a mess, and it's written by an author. He's talking about, I have no idea. This is an article that I found on Facebook. It's got some quotes in here. You basically would have to fact check any of the quotes or any of the information, because I don't know who Dennis Michael Lynch is, .com. I mean, maybe this guy is someone. I mean, you got to do all this looking around. And, you got to ask yourself, who pays this guy? Who are the supporters? Who are the advertisers? It's just getting to be the point. I don't know. Maybe here we have someone who raised their hand, maybe who knows about Dennis Michael Lynch or can help us determine what's real and what's not real news. I'm so concerned and confused. 069, you're live with Nick Terry. Hey, go ahead, buddy.
I'm going back to your previous story about the smoke. Dan Rather has been interviewing. He's got a show called The Big Interview. He's been interviewing rock stars, Billy Gibbons and Charlie Daniels and others. And he interviewed Willie Nelson. And among the other things that Willie talked about was his own brand of marijuana. Now, I know years ago they used the hemp for making ropes, and supposedly marijuana eases pain for people with constant pain for whatever reasons, cancer, whatever. But smoking marijuana is who can consider that being good? Or am I wrong?
That's a very thorny question. It's probably not as dangerous as smoking cigarettes. Is it good for you? Hell no. The interesting thing, I'm going to throw something out there. The interesting thing about this whole Willie Nelson bit is Willie Nelson is beloved as a country singer. Years ago, the country singers would sing songs like, you know, I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee, and the whole idea was, you know, we only drank beer. We didn't do the horrible things like marijuana. And yet the country stars use drugs as much as anybody else does. And it's just weird. You know, a lot of things have really gone 180. Years ago, anybody with long hair was considered to be awful and terrible and this and that, especially in the rural areas or redneck areas. And now all the rednecks have long hair. And the country singers have long hair. And it's like, what happened here? How did this switch around? Who changed the rules and who forgot to tell me? Very weird.
That's a really good point you made. Very good point you make about the long hair, you know, people with long hair and tattoos and all that, and the the prejudice. I see it where I live, you know, how police respond to you if you got long hair. You know, I don't know that that's like that in all parts of the country, but, you know, it is true. Like, a lot of the country artists now, at least the poppy stuff, is, you know, it's long hair and, you know, talking about weed and everything else. You know, it's interesting cultural shift. There was a thing in the news today that the city of Dallas now, anything under 4 ounces you're stopped with, you don't even get arrested or go to jail. They just write you a ticket. You know, it's all about money, 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 money. I think it's been one of the most interesting things to see, you know, when they talk about marijuana and the different medical and, you know, legalized and all this. They talk a lot about economic impact and crime and everything else, but we don't hear a lot about health. I mean, they talk about that cannabinoid oil that stopped the girl's seizures and this and that, but, you know, it moves forward to, like, oh, you have a little anxiety, you can get a prescription for medical marijuana. Well, who doesn't have anxiety, you know? And the thing that I just... The thing that I think that the one word that I have liked a lot recently that comes back around to a lot of problems we have is neglect. It's just neglect. And, you know, if you have anxiety, maybe you should try to figure out what's causing the anxiety, find the root source, and address that. But instead, we neglect the causes of our conditions and ailments, and instead we'll, you know, how do we alleviate the symptoms of stress and anxiety? You know, and it's either alcohol. That's another one that really makes me mad, is alcohol. We have, you know, so many people talking about, you know, marijuana, where, you know, how can that be good for you, bad for you, et cetera. Yet we don't hear a lot about people talking about the adverse effects of alcohol. It's celebrated. You know, if you listen to some of the songs out there, you know, it's drink beer from Friday night till, you know, you go to bed on Sunday. And, you know, it's just so celebrated. And it, like, if you're not drinking, something's wrong with you. And it, you know, everyone wonders why they're too fat, too sick, too this, too that, why they think they need medical marijuana or this or that pill or oxycodone and all this stuff. I mean, that's in the news all the time. Oxycodone, crisis, crisis, crisis. Yet we've got drunk drivers on the road, running into people like Terry, you know, causing havoc all over the place.
Yeah.
And
hey, let me throw that something in there. I was thinking about this the other day. I have 5 times in my life I've been hit by drunk drivers. 5 times. How's that?
Wow.
Guys, huh?
A lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Every one of them with really bad results, by the way.
Why don't we make some sort of a rule where if you have used, let's talk about guns. If you use your gun improperly, you may not be allowed to carry a weapon. What if you use alcohol? Alcohol is a tool, just like a gun is. You use that tool incorrectly. You know, car is a tool. Use it incorrectly, you can't drive a car. If you get in trouble and alcohol is a part of the arrest and the problem, what if they made some sort of restriction that said, you cannot buy alcohol? I know it's flags on your this or that.
That none of that's ever going to work. You know it, and I know it.
I know it's just another law we don't need, but it
doesn't work.
I just think
I
think it's just funny when we have something that I guess that the irony is that we freak out about so many things that involve substance use, and yet you know it's go get your margarita at happy hour and everything's groovy.
Mm-hmm.
Hypocrisy
mm-hmm.
in the world, but I just think again it's neglect. You know, if you got a problem, it's neglect. I think critical thought's something that we talk about a lot. I think neglect and just being neglectful, because neglect seems to sneak up on you, and people don't realize, and they don't think they try to be neglectful, but it's, you know, it's like not cleaning your house enough. You get lazy and used to neglecting things, and I think neglect is something that we should really kind of think about as an important thing to worry about and watch over, not being neglectful.
Well, you know, we have good times and we have bad times, and we have Led Zeppelin. Tonight,
we do.
We have Led Zeppelin. Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, John Bonham, Led Zeppelin. That song really typifies some of the really haunting melodies that they were able to come up with that were their signature. Nobody else like them. Nobody since. Amazing musicians, incredible talent, remarkable shows when they were around. They truly were. They could fill when they were really on. They could fill an arena like nobody could with sound. Great stuff. Traveled with them, worked with them for almost 7.5 years.
Back put that in the on day, the list of back in the day. Put that on the time machine list. If I find the keys to the time machine after I've gone shopping for Electrolux vacuum cleaners and Zenith TVs, I will go to a Led Zeppelin show and then come back to present day.
Yeah, you won't be disappointed in most cases. There were some nights when they weren't on, and those nights were kind of thud, but for the most part, they were able to make it happen.
Terry, since you mentioned that you toured with them for so long, how did they change from when you first met them and toured with them till the end? How did they change as individuals? Did they grow up in those 7 years, or were they mature in the beginning?
They certainly weren't mature in the beginning any more than any other kids were at that age. John Paul Jones, JP, was always the sort of backbone of the group. No one knew how bad Bonnie's drinking problem was. That was an issue there. And I've told this story before, I think, on the radio, but I ran into Robert in New York a number of years ago in a hotel, and we sat down, had some tea together, and one of the first things he said is, you know, I really don't remember very much about those times. And he did his fair share of things he shouldn't have, as did a lot of other people, and Jimmy was probably a lot worse than he was. But it's the other side of that coin is it's probably no worse than anything that's being done today, and perhaps not as bad. They're artists, you know, they're musicians. They operate differently than other people do. And I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that artistic bent. To answer your question, I don't know that they changed a whole lot. But after John Bonham passed away, I will tell you that Robert was profoundly affected. Profoundly affected. And that is his primary reason for not going back out on tour, by the way, with Led Zeppelin. I don't know exactly what he means by that. For a while, people thought that it was JP, John Paul Jones, who wouldn't do the tours. And I guess to a certain extent, he didn't have a great love for going back out on the road with Zeppelin. He's an accomplished musician in his own right. He's amazing. Anything you hand him that has strings on it, he can play it well. He was always the odd man out, and yet he was really the spinal column for the group. He was the bass and keyboards guy, and by God, he was the guy who was sober and who did things the way he should and kept the band moving forward. So that's the best I can give you for an answer. I don't think they changed a whole lot, but once Bonnie died, I think that they all changed. I think it was an incredible shock to all of them. Unlike many of the groups, they didn't fight a great deal among each other. They got along relatively well. Jimmy definitely did far more than he should have as far as chemical enhancement, and Robert certainly had his share. And with Bonnie, it was vodka, I believe, that was the real killer.
So, not that there's ever a good way to die, but it is unfortunate with Bonham that, you know, died on his throw-up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The whole thing is very sad. Very, very sad. So, Nick, where are we going?
Well, I suppose a lighter topic would be coloring eggs.
Easter.
Methods
Easter.
And ways of coloring Easter and Passover eggs. Well, I don't
Happy
Passover,
Easter.
They don't do eggs, but
the Passover bunny. He's the one with the yarmulke.
Hi.
And we want to wish all of our listeners who are of the Jewish religion a very happy Passover, and the Christians, happy Easter, and the folks who don't believe in either one, happy Easter to you too, from the bunny. Coloring Easter eggs, something I've always enjoyed doing, something I do every year, and I have a great time doing it. I love to color Easter eggs. So I'll share with you some of mine, and you can share with me any of yours, and any of our listeners who have ideas or ways that they were doing that or like to do it, please let us know. First of all, I used onion skins when I was young to color eggs, and it provides a very rich spectrum of browns and tans. Some really, really nice stuff. I've used a bunch of other types of kits. You know, we of course have the PAS kits that are the most prevalent, PAAS, and every year they come out with something new. They give you a little setup for doing it, and lots of fun for the kiddies like me. And they this year put out a gilded egg kit where you can actually do metallic colors of gold and copper and things like that.
Cool.
I've always gotten a little more creative than that as well when I kind of haunt the places where they make kits for doing cupcakes and so on, where they've got approved food coloring, stuff that's not going to cause you to have children with flippers and wings. And those can be added to either the liquid that you're coloring with or other things. And I will tell you something about coloring eggs that they tell you not to do. They say the eggs should be cold. Actually, it doesn't matter too much. They're better off if they're just slightly lukewarm. But then they tell you that the water you're dipping in should always be cold. You should use warm water, not hot water, but warm water. And always put a tablespoon of vinegar in, no matter what. The vinegar etches the shell of the egg and makes the color penetrate and makes it deeper. Makes it hold better. Anything beyond that is up to you guys, but I'm always mixing colors too. When you get about two-thirds of the way through, you know, you take this one and pour it in that one, and that one and pour it in this one, and start making all kinds of crazy stuff. Somehow, many gray and army green Easter eggs seem to come out of that color mixing, but it's fun to do. It certainly is. Great thing to do with your kids. And don't just do a dozen, for God's sake. Do enough to make it worthwhile. And, you know, at my household, you know, 5 dozen eggs is usually what we're looking at, or 6 dozen eggs. And then you got a bunch. You got some fun. You got ones that you can put people's names on when they come over for Easter dinner. And off you go. Then we play the Russian egg game. Anybody wants to know about the Russian egg game, just simply write us an email at hellnotheradioshow, and I will be happy to personally respond with the rules and information on the Russian egg game. It's a lot of fun. It actually came from Latvia. I don't know why it's called the Russian egg game. Maybe the Russians did it first, but the very, very Cliff Notes version of it is you put something out that makes an enclosed area on a, you know, on a hardwood floor or a carpet. Usually we want a hardwood floor if possible. And you can use towels rolled up, or you can use a rope or any number of things. As I understand it, the Latvians usually use a piece of heavy rope. And then they have a little cardboard ramp or wooden ramp that's just basically a V-shaped thing. And they put coins and little plastic or otherwise buttons in the midst of this thing, in the middle of this ring, and you roll the eggs down the ramp. If an egg touches if it ends up leaning and touching on one of the coins, you get the coin and your egg back. If it leans on one of the little buttons or colored pieces of plastic, you get a prize. And what was that? Did one of our listeners just get assaulted, assassinated? I don't know.
I think he was hauled off the plane. We'll see if they let him back on.
Yeah, he was hauled off the plane. De plane. At any rate, if you
bored
hit someone
by
else's
your
egg
story, one of the two.
You get your egg back. If you don't hit anything, your egg stays in there. Everybody gets 3 eggs to start. And believe me, it can go on for quite a while. It's a lot of fun. It's very easy. It's a lot of fun. And you're using hard-boiled eggs. So the dogs like to play, too, because they always get an egg or two afterward, and they're very happy with a hard-boiled egg. So, there it is. There you have it. Happy Easter and
there it is.
The Russian egg
What's
game.
The,
yeah.
The thing that I'm interested in knowing more, when we were talking on the show earlier, you were talking about non-denominational Easter and Passover and things like that too. And I suppose there are, I've never had a concept of a secular Easter. And I don't really know the history of where the bunny, you know, raised, I mean, I was raised Catholic and you know, Christian.
Peter Cottontail.
There's not really a, right. So what is, okay, so what is it? Like, what's the history of the bunny being hooked
okay,
up with Easter?
Okay, you're going to be very surprised. You're going to be very surprised at this, but I can't remember. I knew it one time. I can't remember where it came from. I thought you might ask me that, and I just don't know where the Easter Bunny came from. See what you can find if there's anything. Easter Bunny.
Yeah, let me see.
It was always a very romantic thing for a little kid. As in fascinating, happy times.
Originated among German Lutherans, the Easter Hare originally played the role of a judge evaluating whether children were good or disobedient in behavior in the start of the season.
Yeah.
Eastertide.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Okay.
The bunny sometimes is depicted with clothes. Sometimes he has outfits. In legend, the creature carries colored eggs in his basket, candy, and sometimes toys to the homes of children, and as such shows similarity to Santa Claus or the Christ kind, as they both bring gifts. So, you know, we're again going to children, the Easter Hare bringing Easter eggs for the children. So, yeah, so if you're good, you get a fatty Easter basket. And if you're not so good, not so much in your basket. So that's right, you'll get...
Yeah, either that or the bunny will drop off her children and you'll have to raise them.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
You know what's interesting
is funny e-cigarette, you jerk.
Yeah. Remember that Lewis Carroll also used the rabbit in the waistcoat with the watch in Alice in Wonderland, the March Hare. And I wonder if there's a connection between the March Hare and, in fact, the Easter Bunny. It's the right time of year, March.
Probably.
It would make
all the sense.
Yep. And the bunny with the waistcoat and
and
his little timepiece. So okay.
It's kind of like having a tradition. So I mean, it comes out of from German Lutherans, and it sounds like it kind of been more of a secular thing. Anyhow, it just goes along with Easter. You know, they kind of hitched it to. You know, it's interesting how our holidays, things like that, you know, come along, especially at Christmas time and putting trees. A lot of people would tell, a lot of people tell you that putting trees is a pagan thing in your house. You know, it's also, you know, some cultures that, you know, that think that we have cats inside, you know, living in houses on our furniture, and people consider them like rats in some place. It's just... The world
sometimes
is such an amazing place.
At any rate,
the world is amazing. Depending on where you are, things can be so completely different. It really blows my mind sometimes.
Let's talk a little bit about traditions. We've talked about it before on the show, but how important they are to kids and to be able to learn these traditions and then pass them on. So much of that is not happening anymore. And there are a lot of traditions associated with Easter. Of course, people would get their Easter bonnet. They would get Easter clothes. When I was a little kid, I would get a spring jacket for Easter every year. And I always look forward to getting that nice new spring jacket. I outgrew the other one and time for a new one. And it was always kind of cool to get your spring jacket. It's part of the tradition that the Easter basket gets hid somewhere. So you got to go look for that Easter basket.
Right.
And that was half the fun. And the other thing that came out of that eventually was the Easter egg hunt, where you go looking for Easter eggs. Now, lest you think that I have lost what few marbles I had left, I will simply tell you that I've done this for as long as I have had dogs, which is almost my entire life. But dogs like to go Easter egg hunting. Let me tell you, they love it. As soon as they see that Easter basket, they know exactly what's going on. And they absolutely love the whole routine. What we do is take these plastic Easter eggs, the ones that, you know, pull in half, and they're multicolored, and put pieces of liverwurst and pieces of good quality hot dogs in those eggs. And if you don't think the dogs have fun running around the yard looking for those things, that is like, you know, it's like the kids just running wild. They're having such a great time with it. And they get their little treats that are good for them. Nothing wrong with a little liverwurst or some really good quality weenies that don't have nitrates in them. And the dogs are happy, happy dogs. They also know that they have baskets, and each of the dogs has his own basket, and they know that for the next week or so, they will get treats out of that basket. So as soon as you go near the basket, boy, the tails are wagging, they sit their butts down on the carpet, and they are just absolute angels, anxiously awaiting another Easter goodie out of their basket. And they know the word basket very well. So, some little bits and pieces, some fun things you can do with your kids to have an Easter egg hunt, to do things with them, color the Easter eggs. If your kids are artistic, or you're artistic, that's not autistic, by the way, artistic, do things with them that have to do with the eggs, and go the next step. Draw things on the eggs. I'm lucky if I can put somebody's name on with the little crayon. Some people are very talented and can do remarkable things with Easter eggs. If you're one of those folks, by God, do it and have fun with it. One other thing, when you're done with your coloring, in order to set the color and keep it from running into other things, coat the eggs with just a little bit of, well, years ago they used to use lard. Nowadays, the safest things are either a little bit of mineral oil or a tiny touch of olive oil. Coat the outside of the eggs. It also makes them shiny. It's harmless and sets the color and holds the color. So there it is. There it goes. And there you have it. Easter eggs. And this Sunday is Easter Sunday. Nick, are you cooking Easter dinner?
I am, but I don't know what I'm making quite yet. Mm.
I just bought a 22-pound ham today. So I'm going to do ham. And one of the things that I really, really detest is the fact that it's so damn hard to find hams bone-in and whole, rather than these spiral-cut disasters that are just rammed with sugar, you know, coated in brown sugar and chemical crap. I don't know when we got going on these spiral ham things, but boy, you can keep your spiral hams. I will make a very fancy glaze for these hams. I also inject into the hams a part of the glaze, usually consisting of white wine and a lot of other things, spices and so on, and turn out beautifully tender, wonderful tasting hams with a really nice crust on the outside. I change my recipe every year, have a little fun with it. And of course, there's the obligatory ultimate mashed potatoes and some form of corn and lots of other side dishes to go with it. So, fun on Easter. Do something good. I've got some folks coming up from Indiana. I've got some folks coming up from Illinois. I've, you know, got people coming for dinner. Make it nice for them. And then, the end of it all, Cards Against Humanity after the Easter egg game.
There you go. Or apples to apples if you have kids around. But,
Cards Against Humanity.
Thing that is good. It is good. One comment about Easter egg hunts. Something my dad used to do is take plastic Easter eggs and write clues in them. And he'd come up with all sorts of crazy clues as to where the baskets were hidden. And,
great idea.
It was really cool. And then sometimes he'd lead one clue, would then lead to another clue. So it was like, you know, at certain point, you know, it's like, I can, you know,
great
we have
idea,
to get ready
man.
To go to church. Kids are screaming, like, where's the damn basket? You know, but
yeah. Great idea.
It was that was a fun tip, yeah.
Great idea. That's great stuff. Well, we're about out of time here. I want to say thanks to everyone, and we'll see you soon. Are you on one of your forays next week?
It would be a block week for me, but I'm missing a meeting because I'll be in Padre, so I'll be on Easter break. So we'll be back 2 weeks from now. How's that?
All righty. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful Easter. Enjoy your family.
All right.
Enjoy your food, and take care of yourselves. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.